Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories. We have stories that should thrill you a little and chill you a little.
It's amazing.
You will hear adventures sent in by you guys, classic stories from the pulp mags, and episodes from the golden age of radio. We have special segments like Ghost Stories with Sylvia.
That's amazing.
And the paranormal with Jason.
I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
So settle in for the next hour and enjoy the show. Oh, and you just might want to prepare yourself to be taken away from today.
Another 5-minute mystery.
This 5-minute mystery is being brought to you by A Year in Review. We will open the book, but its pages are blank. We are going to put the words on them ourselves. The book is called Opportunity, and its first chapter is New Year's Day.
Okay. Homicide Division, Inspector Nichols speaking. Oh, Ralph Dean, the guy that backs all those nightclubs with his dough? Where? Right, I'll be there in 10 minutes. So you two are Thomas and Gerald Klein.
That's right, Inspector.
We're brothers.
Where's the body?
That's right, fellas. The coroner'd like to make his examination as soon as possible.
It's in this next room.
You see, we're both bachelors, and we have our living quarters here above the nightclub.
Right in here, Inspector.
Not much of a mess. Mustn't have been a struggle.
There wouldn't be much blood in a death like this. Death was too instantaneous.
As we said, Inspector, Dean came to Thomas and me and asked if he could come up here to talk over a business deal with this Johnson fellow. Dean had put up the money for his club, too, but Johnson wasn't cutting in with enough dough.
Was Dean financing your club, too?
Why, yes.
But to get back to the story, Inspector, Dean and Johnson came up here to this room. After about half an hour, Thomas and I heard 2 shots. We happened to be in the kitchen just below here.
We ran right up, but Johnson had beat it.
But not before he stopped to plant my necktie in Dean's hand to frame us, make it look like I killed Dean.
How about that necktie in the victim's hand, Coroner?
It looked as though Dean ripped it off the neck of his killer.
See? Johnson's a smart operator. He knew it would look that way.
Can you remove the tie from his hand, Coroner?
Yes, if you want me to break his hand. It's a case of cadaveric spasm, Inspector. Dean has a death clutch on it, and the only way you'll remove it is by breaking the hand.
Johnson must have gone up into our wardrobe, grabbed one of Gerald's ties and torn it, then put it into Dean's hand and forced the fingers around it.
Yeah, Johnson was jealous of our business and was double-crossing Dean, so he thought this would be a way to kill 2 birds with 1 stone.
He killed Dean and planted suspicion on us.
You might as well store your alibi, boys. Johnson had nothing to do with this. Gerald, you fired the fatal shots as your brother Thomas stood by and watched. I'm arresting both of you for Dean's murder.
Do you know what evidence proves Gerald pulled the trigger? In 1 minute, we'll be back with the solution. But first...
Okay, there's a lot to take in here, but I have to agree with our detective that these guys are guilty. Now, how do I know this? Well, think about the tie. The coroner said that he had a death grip on it. If the story that the brothers told is true, how in the heck did the other guy get the dead guy to grip the tie? It couldn't have been placed there to frame them. Simple logic. Now let's head back and see if I'm right. But I know I am.
Now, back to the inspector and his explanation.
Johnson couldn't have planted that necktie, Gerald. That tie of yours in Dean's hand is the clue proving your guilt. If you walked close to him and shot, he grabbed at you, caught hold of your tie, and in falling, tore the tie off. When a person dies suddenly, as did Dean, they often clutch tenaciously as to whatever happens to be in their hands. Their fingers are set in an unmovable grasp. In that case, it's a medical impossibility for anyone to place something in the victim's hand and cause that dead hand to grasp it as tightly as Dean has your tie. That clue in Dean's hand is going to be worth two killers in the electric chair.
A death grip is a real thing, and this story is pretty spot on. We even have the shady world of the nightclub as a backdrop. You just can't ask for more. These two guys are gonna fry. This 5-Minute Mystery was brought to you by A Year in Review. Happy New Year from Ron's Amazing Stories.
Yes, that you say.
Welcome to the podcast. We're close to a new year, and I thought that we should do a review. But what a year. And if we're all being honest, do we really want to review it? I don't. But then again, there is something worth our time. This past year has seen more stories than ever submitted to the show. Probably due to our self-isolation, we've had more great adventures, amazing encounters, and some strangeness that can't be explained. But we can't listen to every story that was sent in. However, what we can do is pick one story for each month. And that is what I have for you today. I have picked what I think are the best stories from January to December. It was a tough job picking just 12 stories, but I think I've done it. You will have to be the judge. I received an email from Fernanda Poe, who lives in the Philippines. I'm always excited to hear from other countries. The podcast is still doing well there and is usually in the top 100 on the Apple Podcast charts. Thank you, Philippines. Now, Fernanda writes, "Ron, I've been thinking about your new podcast idea. While I would rather you read the stories, I can see having a live show is a good idea. But I think the title, These Are Your Stories, should stay with Ron's Amazing Stories. Might I suggest that you call the new show Your Amazing Stories? Fernanda." Okay, I have to say that this hit me like a thunderbolt. What a fantastic idea for the name. I wish I'd thought of it. While I won't promise to use it, I will give it a test run. Thank you for your suggestion. It is a pretty good one. I did some initial research and didn't find anyone else using it. What I would like to ask is that the listeners send in their thoughts on it. Also, maybe you have a better name. Thank you, Fernanda. I really appreciate your thoughts. And now, this one from Audible. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, computer, Kindle. Whatever you have, you can listen to Audible on it. So what am I listening to right now? The War of the Worlds, performed by Orson Welles.
Ron, was not that a radio show in the 1930s?
Yes, it was. And please use proper grammar in the future. In fact, this play was performed on October 30th, 1938 by Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater. On that Halloween night, the Earth went to war with Mars when the Martians invaded New Jersey. Now, I'll bet you're thinking, why would I want to hear that?
That is not what I was thinking.
Go with me on this, okay?
Fine.
It is a fact that people that heard that drama on that fateful night believed that what they were hearing was real. Panic ensued. Here's a clip from that original broadcast.
Kind of like a 4th of July rocket.
Yes, then what?
I turned my head out the window and would have sworn I was asleep and dreaming.
Yes?
I seen a kind of greenish streak and then zingo. Something smacked the ground, knocked me clear out of my chair.
Well, were you frightened, Mr. Wilmot?
Well, I ain't quite sure. I reckon I was kind of riled.
Well, thank you, Mr. Wilmot. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you want me to tell
you? No, that's quite all right. That's plenty. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard Mr. Wilmot, owner of the farm where this thing has fallen. I wish I could convey the atmosphere, the background of this fantastic scene. Hundreds of cars are parked in a field in back of us, and the police are trying to rope off the roadway leading into the farm, but it's no use. They're breaking right through. The car's headlights throw an enormous spotlight on the pit where the object's half buried. Now, some of the more daring souls now are venturing near the edge. The silhouettes stand out against the metal sheen. One man wants to touch the thing. He's having an argument with the policeman. Now, the policeman wins. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there's something I haven't mentioned in all this excitement, but it's becoming more distinct. Perhaps you've caught it already on your radio. Listen, please. Do you hear it? It's a curious humming sound that seems to come from inside the object. I'll move the microphone nearer. Here. Now, we're not more than 25 feet away. Can you hear it now? Professor Pearson.
Yes, Mr. Brooks.
Can you tell us the meaning of that scraping noise inside the thing?
Possibly the unequal cooling of its surface.
I say, do you still think it's a meteor, Professor?
I don't know what to think. The metal casing is definitely extraterrestrial. Not found on this Earth. Friction with the Earth's atmosphere usually tears holes in a meteorite. This thing is smooth and... You can see it's cylindrical
just a
shape.
Minute. Something's happening. Ladies and gentlemen, this is terrific. This end of the thing is beginning to flake off. The top is beginning to rotate like a screw, and the thing must be hollow.
He's moving! Look, come on! Keep back! Keep back! Keep those men back! Keep those idiots back! Keep those idiots back! Come on, get off! The top's loose!
Look out there! Stand back!
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the most terrifying thing I've ever witnessed. Wait a minute. Someone's crawling
someone
out
or
something. I can see... Turning out of that black hole, two luminous discs. The eyes, it might be a face, might be almost... Good heavens, something wriggling out of the shadow like a gray snake. Now it's another one and another one and another one.
Now imagine that you're at home and you hear that on the radio. Nothing like it had ever been done before, and all the people had to go on was the similar broadcast that they had heard 1 year before when the Hindenburg crashed in that very same area of New Jersey. Same type of reports and reporting. No wonder that the people believed it. This was a famous time in history that shook the world, and you can have it for your very own today. Here is what Audible has set up for us. They are offering a free audiobook and 30 days to give you the opportunity to check out their service. This includes free access to the Audible Plus catalog, which is updated monthly with new titles. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories, and you can get War of the Worlds starring Orson Welles today. Thank you, Audible. And now it's time for a year in review of your stories.
These are your stories, sent by you, for you.
As I said at the top, we are going to do your amazing stories, a year in review, part one. This time we will do January through July. Next week, we will finish up with August through December. Now, how this will work is that I have picked a story from each month of the year 2020. We have had some crazy stories, funny stories, and of course, creepy stories this past year. All I have to say at this point is thank you to everyone that has shared a story. It has been an odd year, and you guys made it just a little bit better for all of us. Our first story comes from New York and is by Samuel McCarthy. It was the very first story of 2020. Sam is a limousine driver for a major firm and has driven pop stars and royalty across the great city. Sam is also writing a book titled Confessions of an Irish Cabbie. Here is his story titled Limo Number 613. When I graduated from high school, I really didn't know what I was going to do with my life. I worked part-time for my father's taxi service and continued doing that for most of the 1990s. In 1999, I decided to step out on my own and start a freelance limo service. I was not able to compete, so I sold my business to the biggest limousine company in New York and have been working for them ever since. A lot of strange things happen when you're driving the rich and famous around, but the strangest one of all? Well, that has to be the one that I experienced when I was alone. It occurred in limo number 613. But first, let me tell you all about that car. The word limousine is derived from the name of the French limousin, which is a particular part of a carriage that physically resembles the raised hood of a cloak worn by the shepherds of the time. The name was then extended to this particular type of car with a permanent top protecting over the chauffeur. This type of automobile had an enclosed passenger compartment seating 3 to 5 persons, with only a roof projecting forward over the open driver's area in the front. Limo number 613 was a 2010 Cadillac DTS sedan. This is your typical for-hire car, the type you would find at proms, weddings, and special taxi services. One night, my coworker and friend, we'll call him Carlos, was coming home from a gig. He was carjacked about 2 a.m. in the morning. Before he could raise the bulletproof windows, he was shot in the head and his body was thrown out onto the street. The car was found 2 days later in an alley, left with the driver's door open and the motor running. There wasn't a single scratch on the vehicle except for the blood of my friend on the front seat. After a lengthy investigation, the car was eventually returned to us. It was cleaned and put back into service. No one wanted to drive that car. It was, in fact, and it felt like, it was cursed. When you drove it, it would do strange things, like stop on its own, break down in heavy traffic, and even try to veer into traffic. It got to the point where it would sit in the garage for months on end without being used, only seeing the light of day when things were busy or other cars were unavailable. This is where my story begins. I was set to pick up a celeb at the airport. My car was being serviced and I had to pull from the pool. Just my luck, the only car left was number 613. I tried to find an alternative, but nothing was available, so I took the keys and drove to the airport, saying a prayer as I went. The trip went off without a hitch. The car behaved, and I was able to do my transport with no issues. After I made my drop-off and I was heading home, I felt a hand on my shoulder. I turned to see Carlos sitting next to me. It was a full version of my friend, and he was smiling. I felt a peace wash over me like I had never felt before. My mind went blank, and from that point on, I was unaware of what I was doing. But somehow, I arrived back at the garage, safe and sound. I turned in the car and went home. That night, I had a dream. It was of Carlos and the conversation we had while driving to the garage. It went like this. Carlos said, "Hello, my friend." "Carlos, is that you?" I replied. "Sí. I've been waiting for you for a very long time." "You've been here this whole time?" He sighed and said, "I have." I thought for a moment and asked, "Can I help you?" "You can, my friend. I need you to deliver a message to my wife. She is sad, and I need you to tell her that I love her, always will, and the papers that she is looking for are in a locked box in the attic closet. The key died with me, but it shouldn't be too hard to find someone to unlock it. Can you do that, Sam?" He faded away, and I awoke. I didn't know what to do at first, but I knew that I had to tell Carlos' wife what had happened. I felt silly, but when I told my story, she began to cry. We went upstairs together and found a locked box in the closet, just as Carlos had said. Inside was the life insurance policy that she had been looking for since his death. Samuel McCarthy, New York. Not a bad start for our year in review. Creepy, heartwarming, and yet quite amazing. This next story is from February, and it comes from Aaron Kimbrell. It is a prime example that a good story does not necessarily have to be paranormal. Here is Aaron's story titled, "The Ghillie Suit Gang." Hello, Ron. I love the podcast and want to thank you for telling our stories. I like the format of reading them over having to tell them ourselves. It makes for a better experience all around, and it doesn't hurt that you read them pretty good. I live in Seattle, Washington, and travel to Canada a lot for business. While out there, I love to hike and climb any and every trail I can find. Here's what happened on one of those hikes. This was near Big Bear Rock. We had hiked in and planned to make our ascent the next morning. My friend had left all her climbing gear and her rucksack just outside her tent, or we definitely think she did anyway, because the next morning we found that her boots, a few clothes, and all of her chalk powder had disappeared. We figured that it could have been completely feasible that she misplaced it, although we were quite sure that they were next to her tent, and we really didn't want to believe that they were stolen. Anyway, we didn't want to read too much into this, and so we just stupidly said to ourselves that perhaps she had left it by some boulders and some animals had, you know, taken some interest in it. I know it sounds stupid, but it was very reasonable to us at the time. She wasn't able to climb that day, but we did. Fortunately, she had brought some tennis shoes along, so in reality, all was well. Anyway, fast forward a year. We're at the same spot as usual, sitting by our tents and chilling after having some food. Mind you, it's pitch black out, and only the camp area is lit by the fire. So I go out somewhere a bit out of sight for a private moment, and what do I see? A dude in a full-on ghillie suit laying flat on his stomach looking right towards our campsite. I kind of stood there frozen as this dude clocks that I've seen him and he jumps and bolts on out of there. I went back to camp to tell what happened and everyone was gone. I freaked out and my mind began to swirl through all of the possible scenarios, none of which ended well. I yelled out for my friends, and finally they called back. It turns out that they had seen two other creepy guys in ghillie suits surrounding the camp. They had tried to chase them down, but weren't able to catch up. It was too late to hike out that night, so we decided to set watches. Throughout the night, we heard strange sounds and weird bird calls, but nothing else happened. I don't know whether the event the prior year was related to the ghillie suit guys, but it definitely has stuck to all of us, and we haven't been back there since. Which, by the way, is a real shame. Aaron Kimbrell, Seattle, Washington. Well, Aaron, I have to say that is one crazy story. And I can honestly say that we've never had one like it, nor have I ever heard one quite like it before. Thank you for sharing it with us, but I do have to ask one question. Where is Big Bear Rock? I've heard of Big Bear Lake in California, but not Big Bear Rock. Thanks again, Aaron. March. What a rough month that was for all of us. The COVID-19 pandemic reared its ugly head, and we all began our self-quarantines. However, your stories didn't stop. It became quite clear to me that you guys wanted to tell them even more. Like this one from Albert Reagan, who resides in Idaho. Hello, Ron. I heard that you enjoy a good cryptid story. While I've never seen Bigfoot, Nessie, or those dogmen that you spoke of, I have seen a Thunderbird and fought one off to save my life. There's no doubt in my mind that these creatures do exist. In July of 1977, we were on vacation in the Craters of the Moon National Park. It was a thick, mosquito-laden summer night, and I was with a group of boys playing in the campground together. Suddenly, from out of the night sky, a shriek shook our world. It's difficult to describe, but it was so loud that all of us grabbed our ears at once. From out of nowhere, two large birds swept in from the skies, attacking us. Two boys dove to the ground and escaped the deadly talons. I wasn't so lucky. The largest of the two birds dug its claws deep into my shoulder. The wind created by the bird's flapping wings was incredible. It struggled to lift me off the ground, but I felt myself beginning to move. I pounded on the thing's breast as hard as I could. It felt like armor, and it hurt to strike him. I knew that if I didn't free myself, I would have been taken. I desperately fought, and finally the thing released my shoulder. The beast hit the ground hard and was stunned for a moment. That gave me a chance to run away. I dove under some monkey bars. The creature made a second attempt to get me, but couldn't get through to me. It shrieked again and flew off to join its mate. My parents found me under those monkey bars, but I refused to leave. Later, a nurse came and crawled inside to treat my shoulder. In the end, I did go back to camp, but I refused to sleep in the tent that night, and my dad let me sleep in the car for the rest of our stay. I know most won't believe my story. I was the subject of many news reports of the day and was quite famous in our hometown for some time. Even today, I can still feel those talons, and I thank God that I was able to escape the Thunderbird. Albert Reagan, Idaho. Well, a Thunderbird. What a great story and so very terrifying. I've actually been to the Craters of the Moon Park, and I want to say it was in the 70s, but I can't be sure. Thank you for sharing your story, Albert. It truly is amazing. Now we move to the month of April. So many great stories this month that it was very difficult for me to just pick one. But I did. It was sent in by May Poole from Anchorage, Alaska. It is a real head-scratcher and has a great message. May's dad is a retired whaler, and they both listen to the show each week together. How about that? The story is titled The Great White Bear. Life for the most part is simple in Anchorage. While it is a modern city, it still has traditions and stories that boggle the mind. My grandmother tells a story that happened to her in the 1950s. About how a great white bear protected her from a savage storm. It kept her warm and alive until the storm passed and she was found by her father. At the time, people believed the story, calling the bear sent by God to protect her. My story is not as dramatic, but I swear it happened. I believe that we all have a spirit animal. It is assigned to us at birth. All we need to do is discover it, and we have a guide for life. It was a dark time for me that I couldn't see a way back from. I decided it would be better to be dead than to continue on. I went out into the wilds to find my end. I sat down on the ground trying to think of a way to do it, when a wolf wandered in. He was not a big fella. In fact, he looked small, and I knew he posed no threat. I reached into my pack and pulled out some dried fish and offered it to him. He readily accepted the treat and laid down nearby. We talked for a very long time. I told him all my troubles and thoughts, and in his eyes, I felt his responses. When I was all done, he stood up and looked at me, and without making a sound, I felt him say, "It would be a shame to lose someone as nice and as important as you." With that, he walked off into the woods. I felt good. I knew that killing myself made no sense, and maybe the wolf was right. I was important. I returned home and told my grandmother what had happened. This is when she told me the story of the great white bear. I'm 33 years old now and have children of my own. I've had a number of chats with my wolf over the years. He always seems to come around when I need him the most. Maypool, Anchorage, Alaska.
Well, May, that is an incredible story. I think we all go through dark times and need something to remind us that we're not alone. Be it a spirit guide or just a close friend, it is best to talk these feelings out. In the end, admitting that we need help is the very first step. All of us right now are going through something together that makes us realize just how important it is and just how much we really need each other. Thank you for sharing your story, May. The month of May 2020 brought to the show probably the most epic tale of the year. I've never really gotten over this one, and it has been documented with tons of research. All of the events you are about to hear were taken from the pages of history, but yet it happens in a dream. How is that possible? Well, let's listen to Alexander's short story titled The Toilbridge Train.
Our next story isn't a story. Or is it? I think even the author doesn't know for sure. Our dreams can feel so real sometimes that it's hard to tell the difference. This story could also be a very real time slip. If that's the case, then it becomes terrifying. I'll leave it up to you to decide. The tale was called The Toilbridge Train, and it was sent in by Alexander Short. Alexander sent this note. "Hey Ron, thank you for your podcast. The story I have for you was transcribed from my personal journal. I finally found it after all this time. I know the writing needs some work, and you have my permission to edit it. I swear too much. I don't know what category to put this in. I'll leave that to you. Thank you ahead of time for reading this on the show. I now live in Manchester, England. I know you like to have the place of origin. Alex." Well, Alex, here is your journal entry from December 28, 2005. "I'm writing this because tonight something terrible happened to me. I didn't know it at the time, but my fate as a human being became mired in the dark clutches of death. And it's all because of some stupid train. My name is Alex, and I'm writing this now in this journal that my mother had given me just before I started this trip. You see, I'm a performer, an actor, so to speak. I had been doing a show in Edinburgh, the Fringe Festival, pretty much actor heaven. Any show that you want to see, it'll probably be there. It has been going since 1947, and it's amazing. I was in a three-person show, a small rendition of Stephen King's Misery. I played the writer, Paul Sheldon, and we performed in this dingy, dirty warehouse. It was perfect. It was small. It was intimate. I couldn't have asked for a better opportunity.
Sorry, I know I'm ignoring the train, but frankly, I don't even know where to start. I wanted to stay in Scotland for a couple months after we closed the show. I had fallen in love with the Gothic architecture, the deep history. That kind of stuff calls to me. But the weather, and everything else about this place, was rather gloomy. But I still loved it. Well, I boarded the train at Burnt Island, and was heading to Dundee to see Glamis Castle and the statue of Desperate Dan. I love old castles, okay? I got on the train around dusk. There were 70 other people, give or take. I had been on a Stephen King kick, kind of ironic now when you think about it, and sat down to dig into his book, The Shining. Never read it before. It was about some psychic kid with daddy issues. Or at least that's what my classmates said before throwing me her copy. I was well into the novel when around 6 p.m. I started feeling my eyes getting kind of droopy and I was feeling tired. This is where things went wrong. This is the one time I wish I could have stayed awake. I didn't know it then, but I'd messed up. I woke up about an hour later, 7 p.m., feeling like crap. Something smelled. That smell you get when you find a dead rat under your bed, left by your cat. I look around me and everything feels different. It feels wrong. That feeling you get when your mother and father calls you and says, "Hey, I have some bad news." That feeling in your stomach, like a punch from Ali. Everything looks old, like right out of the turn of the century, strange. It felt like I was being goofed on or something. Maybe they had gassed me and put me on a strange train for a laugh. At least that's what I wanted to think. But no one knows I'm here, and I'm traveling alone. Oh, and that smell was making me gag. Looking around the train, I also noticed that I was alone. The lights were really dim. That's when I noticed candlelight. I asked myself, what is going on? The train engine was loud. I can't even believe that I slept through it, but it was loud. I looked outside for any sign of civilization, lights, people, anything. I was starting to panic. Then, out of the door to the coach in front of my compartment, I could see someone walk through the door. My anxiety subsided for a moment, and I breathed a heavy sigh of relief. He was looking at the ground, and when his gaze finally met mine, the anxiety returned. In fact, it was skyrocketing. Everything inside me was telling me, time to get off this train. So I got up and asked the man, who was standing in the aisle about 6 feet from me. I caught his eyes again, although he seemed to be avoiding my sight. It was dark. I really couldn't make out his face. I screamed at him because of the engine noise. "Hey, what's the big deal? Where are we? Why was I moved to this old, smelly train? Where is everyone else?" He looked at me, releases a heavy sigh, and simply points to the seats behind me. 2 seconds ago, I was alone on this train, and now I look behind me and there were people. Or at least I think they were people. They all had the same expression, maybe looking at different things, but they all had the same expression. Their eyes kept darting towards the windows of the car, back at me, and then to the windows. They were looking for something. I don't know what, but they all looked antsy and uneasy. I look back at the man whose face finally appears in the candlelight, and he introduces himself as Mr. Broach, son of Sir Thomas Broach. I said back to him, "Look, I don't give a rat's buttock who your father is, and I swear if this is some kind of joke, the first two I'm coming after are you and your father." I was mad, enraged. I usually don't say such awful things, but I was really beginning to panic. He simply told me, "Everything is fine, and please return to my seat." I obliged him, taking a second to regain my cool. Maybe I was overreacting. Maybe I was just having a crazy nightmare. So I sat, and I began to look around to the other passengers. for help. They wouldn't talk to me. None of them would talk to me. They would just look at me with a worried expression. There was a storm surging outside. Thunder rings every few seconds. Well, after not getting any help from the other passengers, I went back to my seat. The storm was right over us. I'd never been so close to lightning bolts. You see, I could see them crack and split trees along the side of the train from the window. Then I noticed the clothing of the passengers. It looked like I had been dropped into the late 1800s. Most of the men were wearing kilts, and the women were wearing those weird hoop dresses, and everyone carried that terrible smell of death. Okay, now, this is the point where I started looking around for cameras and sound equipment. If this was a goof, and it had to be, it was a good one. I didn't find anything. There was no way I just fell asleep and then fell 100 years through the past. Then the car started to rock back and forth on the rails. You could hear the screeching of the steel wheels. Sparks flew up past the windows and everyone began to scream. I watched their eyes as they rolled back in their heads. Their faces began to disappear into the darkness. Bolts of lightning, the only thing to illuminate their tortured faces. I ran to a window to try to see what was up ahead. There was a large bridge about a mile away. As we got closer, people started moving towards the doors and windows. As soon as we were over water, they started jumping out of the windows and the doors, disappearing into the darkness. Some stayed, crying in the arms of their loved ones. I ducked back into my seat, and all I could do was laugh. I know that sounds weird, but when that much terror is introduced, that's the only reaction that felt appropriate to me. Quickly, though, the laughs turned to tears. My life flashed before my eyes. It didn't take long. I wasn't done. I didn't want to go. I've never been so scared in all my life. I put my hands together and I said aloud, "God, if you're out there, man, I could really use your help. I know you don't owe me a thing, but I'm not done here. I still have more to do. I still haven't had kids or a wife or said goodbye to my loved ones. Please, don't let me die like this." The train really began to jolt back and forth, throwing people and luggage about violently. Then a loud thump came from below the train. Everyone left in the car was screaming. I can still hear it, even now. The train felt like it leapt into the air and then fell. I remember the splash as it hit the water, the chill as the car started to fill with water. This was it. This was how I would die. I take one look around and there's absolute chaos. People are grabbing at luggage, trying to force windows open. It was all too late. We were now neck deep in water and the train had hit the bottom. I take one last big breath with tears in my eyes. I didn't want to go. I love life. This wasn't fair. I know people tell you all the time that life isn't fair. Well, they never sank to the bottom of the river in a train car. So many things I wanted to do, and I'll never get to do them. A life wasted. That's why I cried. The water extinguished the candles. The screams formed into gurgled cries and whimpers. Then, no sound. Silence. Dark and heavy silence. The only things I could make out were the bodies beginning to float around me. The cracks of lightning were still strobing the waters around me. I couldn't hold my breath anymore, so I let go. I let the water into my lungs, and I fell into darkness. After this, I thought, there better be a cold beer and a nice redhead for me on the other side. And just like that, I snapped up in my seat. I looked around, and I was back on the regular train. I started jumping up and down, laughing hysterically. The other passengers in the car looked on in horror. I thought, I'm alive. I made it. People asked me what happened, but I didn't have the courage to tell them, in fear that I would look like a Looney Tune. But really, I just didn't want to jinx it. When I got off the train in Dundee, I felt safe, and I noticed a small little plaque on the landing. It read, Historical Marker Number 317. I paraphrase. Did you know that on Sunday, December 28, 1879, this bridge collapsed, sinking a train to the bottom of the river? Witnesses say that it had been the worst storm in 30 years. It happened at 7:13 p.m., and there were no survivors. Only 46 of the bodies were recovered. I still don't know to this day whether it was real or not. Frankly, I just get scared thinking about it. I've had some issues sleeping because when I start to get tired, I freak out just a little bit, thinking of me sinking to the bottom. I won't ever ride a train again. It's been a long time since my nightmare aboard the ghost train, but I can still feel the water in my lungs. Maybe someday that will go away. Alexander Short, Manchester, England. That has to be one of the best stories we've ever had, true or dream. I really don't know how to comment on this one other than I had to stop several times while reading to shake off the shivers. Truly amazing, Alex. And I thank you for sharing it with us. Now we head to the month of June with this story. It comes from Texas and was sent in by Seth Wood. Seth has titled his story, The Big Thicket Ghost Light. I did a little research on this one and I wanted to share it with you before we read Seth's story. The Big Thicket Light, also known as the Saratoga Light, appears to travelers along Old Bragg Road in Hardin County, Texas. The road was originally a rail bed for a train that traveled from Bragg Station to Saratoga from 1901 through 1934. The lights were reported almost as soon as people started traveling through the area, and news about the lights started to increase starting in the 1960s. National Geographic even published an article on the ghost flame in October of 1974 with an actual photo of the light. Now, here is Seth's story. Back in 1995, my brother, my newlywed wife, and a friend of ours climbed into a Volkswagen Beetle and headed to Bragg Road. We wanted to find out if all the hoopla surrounding the ghost was real and to see if there was any truth to the stories. When we got there, it was dusk, so we could still see the dirt road and the tall overhanging trees. I saw a small yellow light that seemed to be about a half a mile or more away. The more we stared at it, the brighter and closer it became. Then suddenly, the color changed to amber and the light started moving from side to side. I got out of the car along with my brother, and suddenly, it turned white and it was about the diameter of a bowling ball. It stopped in front of our car some 25 yards away and then shot up towards the sky. We looked at each other in stunned silence. This was not what we had read about. But the night wasn't over yet. We again looked down the road and the amber light was back, waving back and forth. This time, it didn't get any closer. I went to the car to get my camera, and as I did, I felt a hard shove. Thinking my friend was messing around, I told him to knock it off. I heard his voice from a few feet away.
I didn't shove you.
Turns out, I was alone. Then, my wife screamed. I turned to her and she was pointing towards the woods. A flame was floating towards us very slowly. Not needing any more encouragement, we all jumped back in the bug and we bugged out of there. Seth Wood, Beaumont, Texas. Good choice, Seth. I probably would have done the same thing, but probably a lot sooner. I found this little ditty on the internet. Town urges timber cutters to not cut timber on haunted road. Houston, AP. The East Texas town of Saratoga is once again up in arms over salesmen who want to cut and sell the timber from a haunted ghost road. but the residents want nothing to do with spoiling the spirit world that they claim that haunts the 8-mile sandy path that seems more like a tunnel with its thick canopy of trees and other foliage. For the fifth time in the last 30 years, Harton County commissioners have moved to sell the timber, and for the fifth time, residents have objected to removing any of the roadside timber that provides the spooky ambience. How about that? Thank you for your story, Seth. We end part one of our journey through 2020 with this story from July. It comes from Michael Radcliffe, who lives in Minnesota. The title of his story is The Scourge of the Mice Devils. Hello, Ron. I just found your podcast and I love it. I'm just starting to work through your library and having a good time. I have a story for you that's not paranormal, but somehow I know you're going to like it. Thank you for doing what you do. Well, Michael, thank you for that, and here is his story. So there I was, perhaps 5 or 6 years old. My dad finally took me and two of my older siblings to Basswood Lake. I was so excited to go. We set up a big canvas tent, which was common in those days. I can still smell that canvas even now. I don't know if they ever truly dry out. It always felt kind of damp, and it always had a smell of mold and mildew. I kind of miss it. Like I missed the smell of a 2-stroke motor in the water. After a day of fun, it was time to go to bed. We all walked into the tent and lined up side by side in sleeping bags on top of mats. But sweet dreams didn't await us that night. In the middle of the night, there was a lot of commotion. I woke up to mice scurrying all over us. They had somehow chewed their way into the tent. There seemed like hundreds of them. The mice were in our bags, and they were crawling all over us. There were flashlights zipping around the tent, shining briefly on various culprits. Oh, and there was action outside, too. We could see and hear them running across the top of the tent. An occasional owl would sweep down and grab one of them in the moonlight, right off the tent topper. My dad had work gloves on, and he was trying to corral them, while my brother grabbed them and stuffed them back into the holes. I had nightmares about this for a very long time. The next morning, the nightmares continued. The carnage from the mouse attack had wreaked havoc on our food supply and cooking utensils. Somehow, everything was soaked in water, and it hadn't even rained. Dead mice were everywhere, and in the pots and pan were drowned mice. With no food left and spirits broken, we cleaned up and packed up, ending our weekend trip early. I'm 53 years old now, and I've been back 47 years in a row to Basswood Lake. The events of that night have never been repeated. I have no explanation for what happened, and I've not heard of anyone else that has experienced the scourge of the mice devils. Now, I've had to move my camp because of bears, but never again because of mice. Michael Radcliffe, Minnesota. Well, Michael, that is wrong in so many ways. I've never been afraid of the lowly mouse, and this story changes all of that. To think that they can swarm is the stuff of bad dreams and long nights. Thank you for that. I do, however, appreciate you sharing your story. Well, there you have it, part one of Your Amazing Stories. Next week, we will finish the journey with August through December. Since we didn't have that many new stories this month, December's contribution will be a brand new, completely epic tale sent in by Glenn Waters that you simply will not believe. So join us then. And please keep sending in your stories. We want to hear you in 2021.
Not so important times in history.
In this segment, we take a look at historical events that may otherwise go unnoticed. We look at history with a fish-eyed lens, giving a perspective that should provide no insight to anyone or any time. But it is historical, or hysterical, as the case may be. Join us now for this event in history. Did you know that on June 28, 1820, the tomato went on trial? It's true. Tomatoes became wildly popular in various European countries in the 1500s. Spaniards brought them to their colonized countries in Asia and the Caribbean. When the fruit finally reached England, it was avoided since it was thought to be poisonous. John Gerard, a barber surgeon, was the first to cultivate the tomato, and he believed that it contained tomatine, a poisonous chemical. Gerard was actually correct, but the level of the poison was too low to be harmful. However, his view became widespread and people avoided the tomato like the plague. Practically everyone in North America believed the rumor about the dangers of consuming tomatoes, except for Colonel Robert Gibbon Johnson. During the peak of the tomato season, Colonel Johnson challenged the skeptical citizens of Salem City as he announced that he would eat a tomato to prove it was not poisonous. On June 28, 1820, on the steps of the county courthouse, Colonel Johnson spoke to a crowd of 2,000 people about the history of the tomato. Then he picked one glistening red tomato up and held it up for everyone to see. Colonel Johnson took bite after bite until he finished one and then picked up another. Apparently, there was even a doctor on standby just in case. But the only thing that died that day was the ridiculous rumor that tomatoes were poisonous. Both Colonel Johnson and the tomato were victorious on that day. I hope you enjoyed this edition of the Not So Important Times in History. It was brought to you by Gladys Goodies, great treats for your dog to eat.
I'm Gladdy, the dachshund, the face of Gladdy's Goodies. Are you worried about your pet's health? My parents were too, especially since I developed pancreatitis. They couldn't find any treats I could eat, so they made some. Our natural treats are healthy for all dogs, with and without health issues. We have lots of delicious flavors like chicken, turkey, salmon, sweet potato, beef, and more. With our homemade treats, you won't worry about the contents because they have no chemicals, fillers, or bad ingredients. Go to GladysGoodies.com now to get your fur friend a bag and pick them up some swag while you're there. You'll be glad you did. Remember, we have the treats and swag to make their tails wag. Again, that's GladysGoodies.com. Again, that's GladysGoodies.com.
And don't forget to use our very own promo code, RONS, that's R-O-N-S, to get a 20% discount on all your purchases. That website, one more time, is GladysGoodies.com. That was episode number 472 and is the last podcast of 2020. I want to thank all of you who listen each week to the show. You guys are the best, and I would be nothing without you. If you want to follow the podcast or the blog, head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you will find any of the links I mentioned and how to contact us. Do you want to help the show? The best thing you can do is to tell your friends all about it, and please leave reviews or feedback wherever you listen. Clicking that follow or like button makes us grow. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.